William Cohen served as Secretary of Defense under President Bill Clinton from 1997 to 2001, making him the 20th U.S. Defense Minister. He was a member of the U.S. Senate and Congress from Maine for 24 years. He has written for The Washington Post, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal, and is the author of the New York Times bestselling Dragonfire. Drawing from his years of dealing with international crises and defense planning, as well as an interest in NASA's continued research on asteroids, Cohen now creates a sweeping, all-too-realistic political thriller. It is entitled Collision and follows the trials and tribulations of trying to spread scientific evidence that may be counter to ambition and greed. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Secretary Cohen to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
A great honor to have you here. What brought you down this path of wanting to delve into this?
Well, I've been writing for most of my life, starting in college, and this is my 14th book. And I've delved into fiction because I feel I can tell a little bit more of the truth in a more entertaining way than simply writing a nonfiction account of things that interest me. What interests me of things that threaten us, certainly internationally, but also from nuclear weapons and the spread of nuclear weapons. And my previous novel to this one was called A Blink of an Eye. And it was about a nuclear bomb that destroys the city of Savannah, Georgia. And then it puts pressure on the president, obviously, to find out within a very short period of time who could have done this, why did they do it, how do they do it, and what do we do about it? And that has always been sort of a nightmare of mine that I talked about when I was Secretary of Defense, when reporters would say, what keeps you awake at night? And I would say a nuclear weapon destroying an American city or any city for that matter, but particularly here at home. And this issue has caught my attention because I've been reading more and more about the fact that we live in sort of a cosmic shooting gallery. With Earth as being a very prime target. And so most of the astrophysicists believe it's not a question of if a major asteroid will hit us, but when. And it could be 1,000 years from now, it could be tomorrow. And this was the issue that attracted my attention, that 2 years ago there was a small asteroid that passed over parts of Russia. It wasn't very big. It was 56 feet in diameter. It weighed about 7,000 tons, and it came at Earth at 40,000 miles an hour and would have had the impact of the equivalent of 30 nuclear bombs the size of the one we dropped in Hiroshima. And then the same day, another asteroid passed by. It was twice as big, about almost twice as big, 98 feet and 40,000 tons, and we didn't see this one coming either. And so the scientists, the astrophysicists, have concluded there are about 20,000 asteroids, what they call city busters. That would be the distance, say, from home plate to center field in any ballpark, you know, a home run. An asteroid that size would wipe out any city of any size in the world. But if you get bigger than that, a kilometer, those are kind of lights out for the planet. And so those are the ones also of concern to our NASA, to astrophysicists the world over, not only here in the U.S., but China, Russia, elsewhere. And so we have to be concerned about it. We don't know when one will hit, but the further out we can see them, then the likelihood is that we can then be able to deflect them. Now, this is not all science fiction, it's science. And President Obama, for example, has a program which he's asked funding for to actually pull an asteroid into a lower orbit so that it can be visited by an astronaut or a robot. And we now have private entrepreneurs who are interested in the same thing, namely to move an asteroid so that we can exploit the minerals, and they're very valuable, trillions of dollars worth, into an orbit where we have access. So my curiosity is, well, what happens if we start moving them in a way that puts them on a collision course, unknowingly, in our own efforts? So we regulate space in terms of there's an international outer space treaty
right.
prevents or prohibits the use of space for the use of weapons. But there's no regulation pertaining to commercial exploitation of space. So it raises an issue, well, if individuals now or entrepreneurs can raise the funds necessary to put an astronaut or a robot on an asteroid and move it into a different orbit, shouldn't there be some way of coordinating all of that? And if we don't, could we unknowingly put an asteroid on a collision course? And again, if we can see it far enough in advance, like years in advance, we can then deploy either satellites or other types of equipment to move it off course, including solar sails that I know the Chinese are developing, we're developing. So the question is detection and then deflection. And we don't have enough right now to be able to detect. And so this is an issue that should be of concern to us. No one's going to run out and say the Earth is ending, but we have to be concerned about it.
One of the things that you explore in the book is the ways in which that science and economics often intersect with politics. And mm-hmm. is that a healthy relationship? Is that a relationship that we can look at in a healthy manner? Or do we just by design have to be somewhat leery about it?
Well, we live in a free enterprise system in our country. And we want to encourage private enterprise to engage in economic activities that will produce wealth. We do it now with energy. And, of course, there are consequences to that. We had the BP spill in recent years with some devastation taking place right on our coasts and to our aquatic life. So we have to have regulation, but you have to have regulation which is not too heavy and not too light, kind of a Goldilocks approach to things, to say that we want private sector to be engaged as well as the government in a number of activities, but we have to regulate it in a way that doesn't stifle the private sector, on the other hand, doesn't let it have free rein. And right now, in terms of dealing with space, it's pretty much free rein. So I think that by calling attention to it, we at least raise awareness. There has to be some kind of rules of the road, some sort of commercial regulation that we know who is trying to move an asteroid where and whether or not that is safe or unsafe, and basically try to have as much awareness, 360-degree awareness all the time of what's coming at us. And cosmic dust is coming at us every day. Some of it is rock size. Much of it burns up in the atmosphere, but most are convinced that we are going to get hit at some point with a major asteroid. But knowing in advance, we can deflect it.
Does having such curiosity ever get you in trouble as a Secretary of Defense of saying, okay, but what happens if this, 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 and this happens?
Well, I didn't write while I was at the Defense Department. I wrote before the Defense Department, then when I got out. But dealing with Dragonfire, and then followed by one blink of an eye, is that reporters continue to ask me what kept me awake at night, and I would say a bomb going off. And to me, that's still a great concern, because what we're dealing with Iran, to put it in a more contemporary time frame now. Iran is, in my judgment, seeking to put itself on the precipice of being able to be a nuclear weapons-producing country. Well, if that happens, then other countries in the region are going to follow suit. Is that good for those countries or the world? And I think the more nuclear weapons we see being developed, the worse it is for mankind. So these are issues which need to be raised, need to be discussed in the context of what's going on in our contemporary lives. And we have to do everything we can to try and say, look, it's against global interest to have more and more nuclear weapons. It's against our interest to have North Korea producing more, against our interest to have Pakistan and others producing more. And so can we marshal the political will not only in this country but globally to say this is a bad idea for the world?
Could you have seen, or did you see, the seeds of what we're seeing now of ISIS and the great unrest in Iran, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan. I mean, could you have seen those seeds being planted and sowed?
I didn't see the manifestation of them. What we saw were dictators like Saddam Hussein maintaining iron fist control over Iraq. At one point, we thought that was a pretty good idea in terms of serving as a bulwark against Iran. And then the decision was made to go in and take out Saddam Hussein. And so did we foresee that this was going to unleash that kind of sectarian hatred? The answer is no. Was it foreseeable? And the answer is yes. So things that we should have foreseen, we did not. We did not make the kind of calculations in terms of whether to go in or once in, what kind of a force we needed to have for how long a period of time. So there were a lot of miscalculations made, which unleashed the forces that we're seeing at play now. Did we know that in Egypt that President Mubarak was ruling with an iron fist? Yes. Did we think that that ultimately was going to cause an uprising of sorts at some point in time? I think that that was also predictable. So some things were predictable, but not acted upon or acted upon too late. And we at least have the benefit now of understanding that we can't take democracy and plant it like an American flag in countries that have no history of it, that have no institutions that can support it. And that's a very tough lesson for us to have learned, but hopefully it will guide us going forward, that we have to be very prudent and careful about what we do with the power that we have. Otherwise, we're expending it in ways that are counterproductive and weaken our power in the eyes of the American people and also globally.
It seems, and I'm not making light of this, but it seems as though what we heard the president speak about ISIS this week from Germany at the G7 summit, and we read about what is happening and the advances that ISIS is making pretty much every day. And if you look for things that are going to, just as an average U.S. citizen, that are going to keep you up at night, well, it seems to me that's it.
It is one of them. It's not the only one, but
certainly,
it's the major one for that region, because that region will have an impact upon the world economy. Now, we feel that we're becoming much more energy independent, and we are. But the problem is that we're part of the global energy supply system and the global economy, so that if that instability continues to expand in that region, the Middle East, and you have an interruption of the oil supplies going into the world economy, then obviously we're going to get impacted, whether we think we're independent or not. And because if the world economy starts to sink, we start to sink with it. So it is a cause of great concern, and the fact is that we are pretty limited now in what we can do. I think we can still in a position to help contain the spread of ISIS. I don't think we can defeat it. I think that has to be done by the Arabs in the region and coming to either a conclusion that the Shia government now in Iraq has to share power with the Sunnis, or you're going to have a lack of Sunni interest in the tribe leaders fighting against ISIS. So there are choices that have to be made on the ground, and chances are they're going to continue to fight until such time they come to the conclusion that fighting is not going to solve the problem. But I think we're limited right now in what we can do. We can only hope to try to contain it. I don't see us defeating it.
In that vein, I found it fascinating, and this question will be somewhat complex, another way of saying muddled, but I'm curious because you have a very unique vantage point. In the many, many people that I have talked to about this issue, and experts and people even who have held your position as Secretary of Defense, when you ask them, when I've asked the question of where does your optimism lie, there is a pause and they say, I don't know that optimism is necessarily the word. And I also bring up the fact that in talking to former Secretary Madeleine Albright not too long ago, she said while talking about this, expressed that belief, but also in a separate conversation was talking about how much she missed the job. And I'm curious as to, for you, given all of that instability and given the fact that there may not be much optimism, do you also feel that way, that there is some part of you that wishes you were still in the game?
Oh, absolutely. It was a highlight of my life. I spent 31 years of public service. The best for me in terms of the most rewarding were the 4 years at the Department of Defense. And when you talk about optimism and spirit, you'll find it there in the State Department as well. But when you see the young men and women who are wearing our uniform and who are so young, so idealistic, so dedicated, patriotic, and can do, that's where the optimism comes through. When you see people like that signing up to put their lives on the line for their country. So there's optimism there. I'm less optimistic about our political system. But would I love to be in a position to help shape the policies of the United States? Of course. You can't help but want to do that. It's a much more difficult world than either when I or Secretary Albright was there. We worked very closely together. We see each other pretty constantly now as we travel around and visit each other countries. But no, you can be optimistic when you see the talent pool that we have to call upon. The real issue is politically. And until we get our act together politically, we're going to have less influence in the world. And that's not good for the world, not good for us.
And to bring it back to the book, it seems as though, and you said this very early on in our discussion, that you can be more honest and more real in fiction. And by doing that, opening our eyes and educating us as readers and as citizens of what is out there.
Yeah, I say that in a sense, if I were to write, and I've written nonfiction books as well, but it's hard to be, when you want to be critical of someone, I never want to embarrass anyone. I never want to be publicly taking someone to task over something they've said or done in an embarrassing way. So I think I can tell the story through characters and reveal some of the characteristics of people that I know and have met and worked with over the years and not make it a personal insult to people. So I can, in that sense, tell the truth about how people think and act in a way that is in the fictional world but represents and reflects some of my own encounters along life's path.
Former Secretary of Defense William Cohen is the author of Collision, a new novel from Forge. Secretary Cohen, a great pleasure to have you back on the program. I thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us.
Well, okay, I'll come back on when the sequel is finished.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Great pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Again, Secretary Cohen's new book is Collision. It is published by Forge. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.